Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Danny and Dusty.
My Uncle Gus is the uncle that liked to work the grill. As soon as he walk in the house, he's like, get away from that grill. You don't know how to start no fire.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
We're going to eat a hamburger, okay? Here we go. Chad, throw the match. Now that's a fire.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm not cooking a brontosaurus burger.
The Fan.
Hour number three, Danny and Dusty on this Monday afternoon. And Danny is here. He's fresh off of Blazers Media Day.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
You need to There you go.
There we go. We need that one when he shows up. There
you go. I didn't do it. I refused. They tried to make me.
No.
No, we did not.
No.
It was a whole thing.
No, you're more of a grunt. You're just more of a grunt.
Yeah. Offensive lineman.
I'm not grunting.
A little unga bunga. I get it. It happens. No, fresh off Media Day.
How was it?
Quick, fast, in a hurry, man. Turned and burned. I think the highlight of the day is that there was no highlight, really, other than a couple points that were kind of funny. Mike Richmond asked Matisse Thybulle what the best place to skate in Portland was, because Matisse may or may not skateboard, but he says, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never skated a day in my life. I've got a contract to uphold, buddy.
That's right. But he's not doing that.
Smart move.
Look. Everybody knows, but you can't say it in public because then it can be used against you. Like, Tease knows.
Like, you know, guys that, you know, maybe ride motorcycles that shouldn't be riding motorcycles.
Endlessly. Or, you
Jay
know,
Williams.
Hop on water vehicles in the summer.
What about riding a bicycle?
Also.
Do they do that in Portland?
Like a banana boat?
Like particularly a banana boat or a jet ski or a wave runner.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Heaven forbid, Jose Fernandez.
Oh, God.
It's got dark.
Yeah.
You can't drive a boat.
There's a lot of things you need to get clear in those contracts.
But if you have a license.
I mean, it doesn't matter. The contract is what matters.
Yeah, I understand, like, not skateboarding. But, like, driving a boat, that's, like, part of being a rich guy.
I mean...
Well, why be rich?
I mean, why give me millions of dollars if I can't drive this boat?
Yeah, it's just those fine print in those contracts get pretty detailed.
I think one of the things that stuck out was the tempering of all expectations by this franchise. Something usually they don't do, but it seems like that is... Hell, we had Dwayne Hankins on to talk about the television deal, and he dropped a, you know, wins and losses won't be what brings people to the Portland Trailblazers this year. We were talking to him.
So typically Media Day is going to be your... most optimistic point of the season.
Everybody's in the best shape of their life.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
And they did do the whole, we're going to run faster this year, but also they even tempered that. Like, everything was tempered. And I think it's the right thing to do. Because so many people are like, just be honest with us. And I think they're being as honest with you as humanly possible. The goal is to get Cooper Flagg. Do not mince words. Do not look at this any other way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper Flagg is the savior.
Right.
That's what this is. And, you know, I've talked to general managers in the NBA over the last couple weeks about this incoming draft class, whether it's Cooper, whether it's Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey, Vijay Edgecombe, Nolan Traore, whoever ends up kind of popping up post-Cooper. I asked three different general managers about Cooper in the sense of, have you ever seen a high school player like this? And what I mean by that is, you look up at the end of the day, he's got 22 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks, 3 steals, and he hasn't dominated the ball. It's just, it just happens, like through osmosis. And you're just sitting there going, what the hell? The only other player that anyone's even remotely mentioned as a player coming out of high school who was even close to this was Blake Griffin. And Blake, outside of his knee injuries, was one of the most dynamic and explosive players in modern basketball history.
Yeah.
But he, even he needed the ball more. But his impact was pronounced. He was a 20-10-4 guy out of the gate.
Yeah, Zion had that too.
But we were, again, like Blake, we were limited because of the injuries. With Cooper,
still.
Yeah, and with Cooper, you're not. He's 17 years old, be 18 in December. He, like, what he is and what he means to this franchise, you know, just talking to people within the Blazers, not even like the basketball or like the high end, but like just the everyday folks, everyone knows what the deal is. Because if they do get him, the trajectory changes so much.
That's part of a rebuild. That's part of a tear down and rebuild, is you need that generational player. Mm-hmm. And until you get him, you fill and accent your roster with role guys through the draft. And make no mistake, that is what Cooper Flagg is.
Do you feel like some of the tempering is also because they've learned their lesson from the past, where guy gets built up into being, or said, hey, he's going to be something.
Scoot.
And then he's not something, or at least not something right away. And then it leads to a lot of anger from fans. Do you feel like maybe they've kind of learned their lesson and they're not going to do that? Or is it all because, like, we are going to do everything possible for Flagg?
It's twofold. I think it is. I think it's part of that. Because remember, we talked about Scoot is not a traditional teenager. He's going to come in. He's going to be a guy. Because in training camp, he was performing incredibly well. I don't know what that says about where the roster was last year, or if the lights were just too bright for him. And I think that's part of that tempering. And it wasn't just today that they tempered Scoot. They tempered Scoot. They tempered Shaden. Really, the only one they tempered Donovan. The only one they didn't was Denny. As far as like the new guys or the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of Denny is like, he's a competitor. He's fiery. He's nasty. All the players that, you know, they for those that don't know, everyone's been in town for about a month for the most part. And they've been doing, quote unquote, involuntary workouts.
OTAs.
Exactly. So they've been running fives. And from everybody that I've talked to, is like, Denny gets after people. Like, he's fiery, he's nasty, he's physical, not even on defense, but on offense. No, he's physical on defense, but, like, his physicality on offense is something that's, like, they feel it, and it feels like something they can build off of. And I think that's a different kind of understanding than trying to temper somebody's development. And I think you heard, I asked Donovan today, like, what his expectations were, like, his role, his minutes, and he's like, I just kind of want to play. And from my understanding is, DA is going to be your starter. Now, the organizationally, they're putting it out there that they're going full Joker. You know, break the pool cue, throw it out, only one of you can come out kind of situation to be the starter. And that's great and all, but DA makes $35 million a year. Anthony Simons makes $25 million a year.
Those things matter in the NBA.
Jeremy Grant makes $30 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are starting. Like, if those guys aren't starting, I will be stunned beyond belief.
Yeah. You just mentioned $90 million of salary.
Yeah. Pretty quick, huh?
For a team that's not going to be very good.
But you also talk about where what salary caps and what, you know, where we're at.
Getting to a floor.
In what, 3 years, we're going to be, 4 years, we're going to be at, you know, $185, $190 million. We're going to be heading towards a $200 million salary cap by the time Victor Wembanyama is up for his max deal, which is insane to think about. But the tempering of expectations, I think, is something that was very prevalent. But also, I don't think that this was, the vibes weren't bad. Like, everybody knows what this is. There is no misunderstanding. Like, conversations have been had. Jeremy Grant was asked about, you know, trade rumors and stuff this summer and what discussions he's had with general manager Joe Cronin. And he said, we've had discussions. We know, like, we're open and honest with each other, and we're on the same page.
Yep.
Robert Williams said exactly the same thing.
I also think this is also a dangerous spot, though, is when you lower standard, where you lower the expectations to that floor of we're not trying to win, then it becomes you have guys on a roster that say, well, every man for himself, then I'm going to make my money. And I'm going to
become
the
Charlotte Hornets.
I'm going to make sure that I'm not accused of being a guy who just has a ton of money that doesn't get anything. And that it can get, it's a slippery slope, and it can get ugly real quick.
The good news is the Blazers really only have one quasi-rotation guy who's up for a contract. That's Jabari Walker. And because he's a second round guy, he's only a 3-year deal as opposed to a 4-year deal. So he is going into a contract year. And unfortunately for Jabari, right now, he's outside the rotation.
Yep.
There's a chance.
I mean, where is he going to be?
That, probably with the Remix. So he can still continue to get run. And that's not a knock on him. It's just when you think about depth right now, you have 4 centers. You've got DA, you've got Rob, you've got WAP, and you've got Donovan. Okay? Then you start factoring in wings. You've got Denny, you've got JG, you've got 2. Mm-hmm. That's 7 guys in a front court rotation already. Already.
Logjam.
Barry's probably your 8th guy there. And that's like, how do you find minutes for him when your rotation is 9 deep and you have 7 in front of you in the front court?
That's ugly.
So
it can get ugly real quick.
And Barry, his dad, obviously Samaki, 10-year guy in the NBA, he knows what this is. And so he's going to be a pro. Last person on this earth, I would imagine, who would ruffle feathers is Jabari, which, to the organization's credit, they have only brought people in that aren't nightmares.
Yeah.
That is true.
That has been something they have prioritized. Like, you can have 1 knucklehead, 2, it gets a little dicey. But they can't be a team full, like the Wizards. They just had way too many knuckleheads.
And I think you look at those guys, and like you're saying, whether it's Matisse Thybulle or Tumani Kamara or Jeremy Grant, the guys that they have brought in have been the solid locker room guys. I mean, the biggest wild card that they have brought in is acclimated actually really well in DeAndre Ayton,
and he,
right? Because of what happened in Phoenix.
Yeah,
he's great today. Talking about his juices. He's a big juice guy.
And honestly, man, he has really taken Donovan under his wing.
Good.
Like, legitimately taken him. Like, they run into each other in the hallway, and he literally runs up and gives him a big bear hug. And I'm like, "Dear, you big goofy, you know." But, like, and he was asked about it, and he goes, "Look, man, like, I am in Portland. There were things that I took for granted in Phoenix that I no longer take for granted here." And like, he thought like things had to be X, Y, and Z, like in a negative aspect. And he goes, "I don't take them for granted here. Like, I can walk on the waterfront with my family peacefully and everybody leaves me alone."
Yeah.
Like, that's like,
well, Phoenix was a bad spot because you go to high school, you go to college, you turn into a pro in one city.
Yeah.
I mean, or one state. The expectations and the notoriety and the notability about who you are and what you are.
But also, I think one of the things we do collectively pretty well as a community, as Blazers fans here in general, we leave guys alone. Like, even though they're in a fishbowl, like, look, 6'10" black guys in Portland tend to stand out.
Yeah.
And for the most part, if you ask most players, they will say that if they have interactions with fans, it's usually people like, "Hey, is it okay if I, you know," like, it's very, very,
Respectful,
yeah. And I think that's a big thing that you don't get in most cities.
All right, let's get one aspect that I think a lot of people are wondering about is Chauncey Billups on this media day. We'll get to that with Danny, who is at the Blazers media day today. This is Danny Dusty on The Fan.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, 3-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, Danny's back from Blazers Media Day. We were talking about the players aspect, but I think a lot of people are wondering about how the coach, Chauncey Billups, we see this all the time. People blaming Chauncey Billups for the woes of the Blazers. Forgetting that this is by design.
It is. And that's the thing is, you know, I've talked to the front office and I've talked to the coaching staff. I've talked to Joe and Chauncey off the record about kind of where things are with each other. And I believe what they tell me in the sense of that there's an understanding and a level of respect of where they are. And I thought Chauncey's answer today about where he stands with his contract was really telling and honestly very fair in the sense of he said, look, it doesn't really matter what year you are in your contract as a coach. Because you can be fired whatever year it is.
Yep, year one.
Yeah, right. He goes, and that's what he mentioned. He goes, look, this. He was pointing out, like, hey, remember Adrian Griffin got fired, you know, right after Christmas last year. Like, yeah, things can go a different way, and I think
Darvin Ham.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't take that long to be on the way out, and even as a lame duck coach or a lame duck contract, he said, I know that wins, and Joe Cronin backed this up earlier. It's not, they're not going to evaluate Chauncey Billups on wins. It's not fair because they're asking him to lose.
I think the fair evaluation will be, and I've said this last year, and we saw it, but maybe not to the lengths that people were hoping, but again, by design, was development of young players, though.
Yeah. And the injuries were a big part of that.
But we did not see a jump in Scoot. Mm-hmm. Like even after his injury, he got a substantial amount of time after, and you were like, well, we're not seeing very much growth. And look, that it's also a two-way street, though. It is a two-way street of the player and the coach have both got to be pulling in that same direction, and you've got to get that buy-in on both sides. But I think that goes to great coaches pull that out of guys, right? Yeah. But we did see it in other guys. I thought Tumani Kamara, his growth that we saw last year, Chris Murray, and what we saw at the beginning of the year compared to the end of the year was night and day from a development standpoint. So there were bright spots, but it was a dark season, and this year's going to be a dark one too.
And the thing is, the holistic kind of top-down approach for the organization right now is this: don't have 50 and 60 point losses. Be competitive in games.
Boy.
But the wins and losses don't matter. The wins and losses are going to come in development, in Scoot's development, in Shaden's development, in Donovan's development, in Anthony's development, in Denny Avdia's development. Like, that's where a lot of this is headed, and I think they were very open and honest in describing that today. Now, they didn't outright say that we're going to win 18 games, because you can't. You got to have something there of, like, it can't be, no, we're going to be in the crapper night one. Because, look, the way that I've done this is, let's say through their first 30 games, which is incredibly difficult. Like, you remember, when we saw the schedule release, we looked at it and went, they're going to win 5 games.
This is going to be tough out the gate.
Look, they win 5-7 games, and they go, let's give them 7. They go 7-23. There's what, 52 games remaining at that point in time? If you've only won 7 of your first 30, what's the likelihood that you're going to win 20 more games?
Yeah.
You're not,
good.
So you're not going to have to shut guys down left, right, and center in January and February. Mm-hmm. You're just going to be naturally bad. Like, one of the books has them winning 18 games now. Like, the win total at Vegas is still 22.5, but, like, if you told me that they won 18, wouldn't surprise me, because it's so stupid, but it's the right thing to do. You need to get one of those bottom three odds and get a 14% chance.
Well, the good news is we'll all be able to see it.
Yes, and you'll be able to see it however you want to, in a modicum of different ways, whether it be Blazer Vision or on K2 or on the supporting channels, and then come January when they launch the Rip City Television Network.
So for you, like, you're a Blazer expert, and so you know what you want to see out of this team, and what Cronin and what Chauncey wants to see. What does losing the right way look like? Because that's what it feels like Blazer fans need to expect this year.
Losing close, leading in the fourth quarter, and then putting in the rotation, guys.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, you get some times where you give guys opportunity to try and, like, you give the starters a chance. They've earned it, right? And then there's some nights when it's just out of reach, and you go, hook. And you just kind of manage it that way. What you want to see is more games that are between 5 and 12 points.
Okay.
Every now and then, final 5 minutes, within 5 points.
And that was a frustrating part, though. It was like,
it's over in the third.
40-point, 50-point loss, 50-plus-point losses last year. That's not good basketball. That's not good coaching. That's not good player development. That's not having a competitive team on the floor.
And they've been pretty adamant about quote unquote losing the right way, which I'm really interested to see. Donovan Klingon's not going to play that many minutes this year because he is buried on the depth chart. And I do expect Rob Williams to be moved at some point in time this year. A little bit of news. Rob has been playing 5-on-5.
Hey, good. That's good. So,
and from what I've heard, he has been a bleepity bleep behind the scenes as far as looking good. So, but Donovan's probably fourth on the depth chart at the four right now. I'm really interested to see, number one, his growth this year in the limited opportunities. But he's a guy who won two state titles and two back-to-back college titles. How does he handle losing?
Yeah.
Because he's going to lose.
Hadn't done it in a long time.
He's going to lose more in this season than he's lost in the last 4 years combined.
Yeah, and he was on Cooper Flagg's AAU team, so they didn't lose in that
ever.
Either.
Like, this is a guy who is a winner. So I because it bothered Scoot last year. Yeah. A little bit of the star kind of dimmed when he didn't perform and they're getting punched in the mouth.
I think to the question that you asked, though, Will, I think it is losing like San Antonio and Utah lost last
yes.
year.
Now,
you look at the end of the year, their point differential was like very respectable. Like it was
under double digits.
Yeah, it was like just under 5 for Utah and it was like 6.5 for San Antonio. You lose, but you lose close and you lose a lot.
Just giving you that opportunity.
There. I think my problem with all of this is I don't understand how hiring a first-time head coach with 1 year of experience on a bench and just TV experience helps develop young players into something that they're supposed to be.
A former player himself. And like the credence and respect that he can have. And then also they revamped their assistants too this year, which is when you talk about player development. Yeah. That is huge. You have got to have the right guys to, when you break off, the head coach isn't coaching 15 guys every single practice, every single night. You have to have a staff around you that is developers.
Yeah, they promoted Gil Abraham, who was one of the player development guys. He is now their director of player personnel. And they hired, obviously, Nate Bjorkgren, who was working as a consultant. He was a guy that Chauncey kind of talked to and leaned on for some stuff last year. I think he's probably going to be the one who runs Portland's offense this year. Which is going to be interesting to kind of see what they do there. And then he mentioned Chris Fleming, who was the Bulls' lead assistant that they brought over. And even more than his like team responsibilities with the Bulls, Fleming was in charge of Coby White's development. And Coby White was one of the best stories in the NBA last year. Yeah. And a guy who was a higher pick who people thought might figure some stuff out. It took him an extra year. And I think if you're looking at it, I think the thing you're pointing at there is, can he do the same kind of thing with Shaden?
Yep. All right. Well,
so there you go.
Good.
Media day.
Blazers media day.
Training camp underway tomorrow here in Portland.
All right. All right. You're going to go to that too. Right?
I'm going to be at that.
You're going to be at that.
I'll be back in studio full on Wednesday.
All right. Coming up next, college football. Let's revisit college. It is football season. It is football season. Let's get to the footballs again.
Yay.
The top 25 revamped, and I think the signal that we saw there is it's not about how ugly it is. It's about getting the damn ball across the goal line and finishing with a win. First is Rust with SportsCenter. All right, top 25 in college football refreshed after week 5 concluded. Look at this, extended.
Ooh.
I don't think we've hit the drum line yet. Alabama jumps to number 1. They jump up 3 spots, rightfully so. Dispatching Georgia with the way that they did, especially coming out of the gate, earned the Alabama Crimson Tide the number 1 spot. Behind them, dropping a spot, was the Texas Longhorns, which I don't think they did anything to hurt themselves.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama beat Georgia, who was the number 1, or well, they were the number 1 team at the beginning of the year, but they were the number 2 team at the time you play them. Yep. And it was a pretty convincing win until about 4 minutes left to go in the fourth.
Yeah, in Texas, I say that, they won 35-13 with their backup quarterback.
Do they pretty have, good. Do they have 2 of the 10 best college football quarterbacks right now?
No. I still won't go there.
15?
Maybe.
They got 2 pretty good ones.
They do.
He's
have 2
really good.
They do have 2 pretty good ones.
I think just about any program would love to have those 2 quarterbacks as their top 2.
Arch starts at every school, but maybe 10, maybe 15.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He does right now.
He's that good. Yeah,
yeah, he's that good. And he's Quinn playing really damn good.
And Quinn Ewers has won in Alabama, so he's won in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. He's won against Oklahoma, and he's won against Michigan.
Yeah, I think that we also kind of we get clouded because we see this all the time in college football. Man, when the pieces around you are so good, it makes you look a lot better.
Yeah.
Like what do you look like when you're on a their even receiver room is absolutely bonkers. Their defense is playing out of this world right now, right? Like, what does it look like when you get pulled kind of back down to earth a little
bit?
Totally fair. Right? Because, like, Michael Penix was, everybody's like, he was really good when he was healthy at Indiana. Then he goes to Washington. You're like, no, this guy is unworldly. When you have three NFL wide receivers, the best offensive line in college football, and you are a very, very good quarterback, right?
Like, right.
Things change. Circumstance changed for Bo Nix. Bo Nix was run out of Auburn. Looked really damn good at the University of Oregon, right? When your talent is upgraded around you and who you're playing with. But Texas slides down one spot to second. Ohio State stays idle at third. Georgia takes a tumble. They drop down three spots from second down to fifth with their loss to Alabama, which moves Tennessee up one spot to number four. The Oregon Ducks move up two spots along with Penn State. They slide in at 6-7 because you also had Miami taking a bit of a tumble with their, I don't know, that was a bonkers game on Friday night.
It was
Virginia Tech. It was the ultimate, but I'll give them credit. I talked about this, I think it was Monday last week. Cam Ward has been playing incredible football for them. He had one of those games, though,
but
that
Cam
we
Ward
saw
back
at Washington State, and it's about this time every year he has a couple of clunkers. Now, he had some insane and incredible plays, including the one where he was about to get sacked and he flips it out. That play is one of those yes plays that you see all the time. So they survived it, though. They survived that weird game against Virginia Tech where, you know, we've seen it. Mario Cristobal can cost his team just as much as he can build a roster that can win. Cam Ward kind of goes through the roller coaster. They win that game, but they fall back one spot. And they survived, and that's the important part. Ole Miss did not survive, and they're the big fallers. They dropped from 6 all the way down to 12 this week.
I think if you're Ole Miss, you have to be really worried, because a lot of people were picking Ole Miss as, oh, they're sleeper to win the SEC. They weren't picking them to win necessarily because they thought they had the best team, but because they had the most favorable schedule. Like, the big game on their schedule was they had to play Georgia, if I remember correctly, as I'm pulling up their schedule now. They didn't have to go and play Texas. They didn't have to play Alabama.
They have LSU, Oklahoma, and Georgia.
Right. Yeah,
and they get Georgia at home.
And that Oklahoma team doesn't look that good. LSU, defensively, it doesn't look like they've taken a big step forward. So really, your big scary game on that was, hey, if they can beat LSU, maybe they beat Oklahoma. All of a sudden, you know, they have one loss against Georgia, and they're going to be in the SEC title game. So the whole theory around it was they have an easier schedule, so that's why they can be a sleeper. The problem with that is you can't lose this game to Kentucky. And as good as that defense is at Kentucky, because that is a good defense.
Their defense did it to Georgia the week before, too, but right. Georgia survived.
And you have to take away the South Carolina game because that seems more of an anomaly defensively than it seems to be the norm. You can't lose that game.
Nope.
That is a game where it is at home. It's not in a rough environment. Yes, they're a good defense, but offensively, you should be good enough to score 20 to 24, 27 points to win that football game. Mm-hmm. That is a game that if Ole Miss was going to reach the heights that they have, they should have won, and they didn't. Yep. And now all of a sudden, that LSU game looks a lot scarier. I don't think you should be scared of Oklahoma, but guess what Oklahoma's best at right now? Their defense. They beat Auburn because their defense had a pick six in the final moments of that fourth quarter. Trust me, I watched too much of that game. And they won that game because of their defense, not because of their offense. And that would scare me as an Ole Miss fan.
And I think the whole point that I have around all of this is surviving those ugly games. Those ugly games happen for every single football team
right.
across college football. And there was a lot of consternation with Oregon the first couple of weeks. Hell, you can look at Washington too. I tried to tell people that Illinois and Rutgers were gonna be tough outs in the Big Ten
this year.
Illinois
is good.
Yeah, I mean, their offense went back to being atrocious against Penn State this week, but
Penn State's D is good.
Penn State's defense is good. Illinois, when they come to Autzen Stadium on October 26th, that's not going to be a pushover game. Rutgers, Washington found out they can run the damn ball. Washington had no business losing.
No.
But they doubled them up, and like they had what 222 more yards of total offense than Rutgers did,
5-3 or something like that.
But that's one of those ugly games that you have to survive, right? Oregon survived that game against Boise, which is looking like a better and better win when Ashton Gentry continues to run wild on everybody across college football. And Boise now is working their way up the poll. If you were to look at the AP poll and say, all right, if this was the college football playoff in the way that they see it, Boise would be the 12th team in right now as a group of five represented. In the coaches poll, it would be UNLV. Funny enough, those two teams will play in a few weeks here. We'll find out who the best team in the Mountain West is, and we'll see if which group of five team is left standing. But as of right now, that win over Boise State, it was Oregon did everything they could to lose that game. They found a way to win it. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing about in the world of college football. You will have these clunkers no matter how good you are, or how bad you are.
Right.
You'll either play up to your competition if you're a bad team, or you'll play down, and it's about survival. And that Boise one may not be the only one on their schedule this year for Oregon. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not going to be the only one. We see it every year. Georgia has like two games where everybody's like, what the hell's wrong with Georgia?
Like, why'd that happen?
Because it's college football.
Right.
These games happen, and it's the survival in those games and just winning and getting through. And then how do you respond to those in the ensuing weeks?
I also, and this is why I think Friday's win was so big for Miami. It's not because Va Tech is a good team, because going into the year, everyone thought they might be a sleeper over there. And then you lose to Vanderbilt, and everyone knows you're not very good. Mario Cristobal, I feel like, and this isn't a direct stat, but he is like 0-10 in these games. When he was at Oregon, they'd always find a way to lose to Stanford. Last year, Georgia Tech, you could have just taken a knee and you would have won that football game, and they ran the football and they fumble. And they find a way to lose. It felt like for Mario, when he played in these games, they found a way to lose. Yep. And finally, at Miami, and I get it, it was a controversial call at the end, but you found a way to win.
Yeah, I don't think he caught that ball. I don't know why they ruled it a catch in the first place.
That's one where
I'm glad
there's no way
it.
The naked eye can see that. Just go to video. Just say, hey, you know what? Video time.
Yeah.
Like, you should just, like hold up V's or something. Just video time. We're going to go to video. Because, like, the naked eye can't see that. And if you call it a catch, you have to have clear and indisputable evidence that it wasn't.
All right.
Set yourself up for a tough time.
Top 25. Refresh for this week, and it looks a little bit different near the top. All right, we got a twin bill of Monday Night Football tonight, and one of them right here on the Fan. We're going to throw it to it right after this show ends. Seahawks heading to Detroit to take on the Lions, and the Titans take on the Dolphins. We'll take a look at Monday Night Football next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. All right, we got a Monday Night double dip again. ESPN 4:30, Titans Dolphins. Miami is favored in this game.
I mean,
sure.
Snoop Huntley?
Are they?
Snoop Huntley.
I counter with Will Levis.
Pro Bowl quarterback Snoop Huntley.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's where it is.
Yeah.
One Pro Bowl.
Will Levis. 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Holy smokes.
And how many surrender cobras?
Well, from just his one, coach or the rest of the fans?
Just one surrender cobra, but then he also has flying squirrel picture, and I don't remember what the Green Bay one was.
It's been
was
ugly.
He just getting trucked?
Yeah.
Probably.
Over-under on that one is 37.5.
Wait, you said trucked, right?
Trucked.
Yes, he did. You don't have to dump
No, we're good here. I understand. There are ears here that are listening. We're good.
Yeah, my son is here. It was in-service day, so my son is here. He's chilling. He's chilling today. He has Dolphins in this one. He's a big Dolphins fan. He likes Tyreek. He likes Jalen Waddle. So Bennett is on the Dolphins today.
Is that his little dance he does?
Quarterback to get them the ball.
He's not concerned about the quarterback to get in the ball because right now he's feeling like he could do it. Just get the ball to Tyreek, get the ball to Jalen Waddle. Good things are going to happen.
I've seen the arm on him. He could do it.
Yeah, he could do it. He could do it. He launches bombs. Big one, though, is Seahawks-Lions. I mean, Seahawks, this could be a statement win for Seattle. Go on the road into Detroit, and Geno Smith has been playing really good football. This Seahawks team defensively has been... They've been doing more than enough.
Right, but you're without a lot on that defense. You don't have Boye Mafe, you don't have Murphy, and you don't have Williams. I don't have a strong lean on this game. If I bet anything, I'd bet the over.
Detroit 4.5, man.
I'll tell you right now, missing those guys on the defense, that worries me about the Seahawks going 4-0.
Boye Mafe has been a revelation for this team.
He's so good.
He's been really
good. He's so good. He's figuring it out under McDonald. He's been awesome.
All right. That does it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is my Eugene day, so you'll be here.
I'll be here. Holding down the fort.
I'll be in Eugene because it is everything's moved forward today with Oregon playing Michigan State on Friday. Have a great Monday. We'll see you Tuesday from noon to 3 up next. Seahawks football on the Fan.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.